The apportionment story, in my opinion, is maybe the most important part of this history for the period I was there. And unfortunately, it can't be handled. It probably should not be handled off the top of one's head. But it is a story that results in a real basis for the court to be applauded, I think. The history of apportionment, we're talking now about the apportionment of the state legislature. Under the Constitution, it has to be done, as you know, every 10 years. The Michigan Supreme Court used to apportion the legislature, and the Democrats would come up with an apportionment plan, and the Republicans with an apportionment plan. And in the 60s, when the court had a crack at it, the justices from a Democratic background had the votes, so they approved the Democratic plan. It was sort of not a very prideful time in the history of the court. The Michigan Constitution had made a change in how that should be done and created a commission which would reapportion the legislature, but the members of the Constitutional Convention lost their staying power, or lost something, and came up with a commission concept that was guaranteed to fail because it had four Democrats and four Republicans on it, with the requirement that if they couldn't agree, which of course they would never do, that the plans would be submitted to the Michigan Supreme Court for a choice between the two of them, between the two plans. And so in the 1960 maneuver, the commission couldn't agree, and the case went to the, I'm talking now about
64, the, that was
64, right. The Democratic plan was adopted. It came up again in the 1970s, in 1972 or 3, and there was a tremendous struggle inside the Michigan Supreme Court. I was not yet present, but I've spoken to most of the justices who were there. There was a Thomas Giles Kavanaugh, as I recall the story, did not go along as expected with the Democratic plan and was regarded as a traitor, and his survival in the court was threatened. And indeed, the next time he ran for re-election, the Democratic Party set out to have him defeated because he wouldn't vote for the Democratic apportionment plan. Well, it was in that context and with that history that the 1980s version of apportionment came to the Michigan Supreme Court. So sitting around our table were three people who had been nominated by the Democratic Party, and sitting there, G. Menon Williams, Thomas Giles Kavanaugh, Blair Moody, three people who had been appointed by a Republican governor and nominated by the Republican Party, Chief Justice Mary Coleman, John Fitzgerald, as I recall, and me. And then there was Justice Levin, who had nominated himself by inventing his own political party in the beginning and turned out to be the biggest vote-getter in the court. And anybody who's a student of the Supreme Court knew that it wasn't a political court. There weren't Democrats and Republicans in our court. I'm very proud to say that. There were liberals and conservatives. There were persons of a philosophical bent who found themselves in groups. But it had nothing to do with partisan politics. I don't think the rest of my life I'll ever convince anybody of that. But those of us who served there knew it. A political party...
Would you make a footnote, though, to the very issue that you've just been talking about, apportionment? When the court was obliged in 64 to make a decision as between two plans, one of them had imprinted a label, REPU, and the other was Democratic. And the response at that time, would you make an exception to what you just said in that particular case, or would you not?
Yeah, I'd make an exception because what I just said had reference to the seven persons that I described.
I see, okay.
Sure, in the 60s and in the 70s, the Michigan Constitution compelled the Supreme Court to choose either the Republican or the Democratic plan.
It had to make a political choice.
It had to make a choice. And it had to make a choice when it came our turn in the 80s also. But we were seven people. I've never worked with people like that before, and I haven't since, who took their oath of office more seriously. It was a marvelous group of lawyers and judges with all of our warts. And partisan political loyalty just wasn't in the decisional process ever. And that includes Soapy Williams, who was the titular head of the Democratic Party forever. And I was very proud of my colleagues, including those I disagreed with most of the time, because they were genuinely judicial with respect to the subject of partisan politics. Now comes our duty, in 83, I think it was,
82,
to obey the Constitution, which said you must choose either the Democratic plan or the Republican plan. We recognized that neither plan was fairest for Michigan, and they were both gerrymandered in a way to advantage the party, and that's a political decision, which is okay, but the Supreme Court should not be put in the position of selecting a package handed to it by a political party. So we were benefited, thanks be to God, by the fact that there had been much turmoil in federal constitutional law at the close of the 70s and the beginning of the 80s about apportionment in the federal legislature, the Congress. And there had been a series of three or four decisions the United States Supreme Court handled down under what is popularly known as the one man, one vote concept. And those decisions, the names of which escape me now, but I knew them, almost memorized them when we decided this case, gave us in the Michigan Supreme Court the basis to declare that the Michigan constitutional provision requiring that we choose either the Democratic plan or the Republican plan was itself unconstitutional. The Michigan constitutional provision providing for the apportionment commission, which ultimately forced the judiciary, us, to apportion the state legislature, was unconstitutional under the federal decisions, U.S. Supreme Court decisions.